The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but religion gets a lot of bad press these days. People keep getting killed in the name of religion. Well, actually, if you'll allow me to make the obvious obvious, people, for the most part, are getting killed in the name of only one religion today, Islam. I know, I'm not supposed to say that. Islam, after all, is a religion of peace. How do we know it's a religion of peace? Because Muslims keep telling us it's a religion of peace. Well, at the risk of sounding politically incorrect, maybe we should accept the fact that actions sometimes speak louder than words. Today, we're honored with a special guest who is an expert on the religion of Islam, both their actions and their words, and I'll introduce him in just a moment, but words fall short when they try to describe the actions of my charming co-host, Sharon Cashard. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you, Bob. I'm delighted to be here. I can't wait to do this interview
today with Victor. This is an honor to Victor Mordecai is well known to many of our listeners. He is the author of an important book called The Seven Deceptions of Islam. He holds multiple degrees from Hebrew University and has served in the Israeli Defense Forces as an army spokesman in the Judea and Samaria Command. Victor also worked for 2 years as senior editor and translator of the government press office under Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir's administration. The two main thrusts of his work was the preparation of a daily press survey from the Israeli press, as well as translating English excerpts from the Islamic press for foreign journalists. Victor Mordecai, thank you so much. We are honored to have you on our program.
Great to be on your show. With your permission, one little correction.
Sure.
My speaking in churches and synagogues all over the world is about the five deceptions of Islam, but my three books are Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat?
Okay.
Christian Revival for Israel Survival, and Islamic Threat Updates Almanac number 1. So those are the three books. The five deceptions of Islam is what I think.
Okay, well, we just invented two extra deceptions on the spot here.
I can easily give you two more deceptions.
I'll bet we can. But that actually matches. There's five pillars and five deceptions to go with it. Well, Victor, I have met many wonderful, peaceful Muslims, and I know you have too.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, because sometimes we do have to speak in general terms, it's unavoidable. Generally, when somebody calls Islam a religion of peace, what's the first thing that goes to your mind? What's the first thing you want to say in response?
Religion of war.
Religion of war.
Yes, and indeed, if you ask any Muslim, any Arabic-speaking Muslim, they will answer with pride that they themselves call their own religion Din Asif. Din Asif means the religion of the sword. Islam is the religion of the sword, in their own words. But, of course, if you don't know Arabic, you're not going to know that, and you will swallow whatever they say, which is that Islam is a religion of peace.
Do you think there are some Muslims who truly think it's a religion of peace, or are they all aware that it's the religion of war?
The Islamic religion teaches, and again, no Muslim will deny what I'm saying, that the world is divided into two. You have the Dar es Salaam, the house of peace, the house of Islam, and opposed to the house of peace is the house of war, which is the house of the infidel, which is the Jew, the Christian, the Hindu, the Buddhist, the blacks, and even certain Muslims. In other words, the Sunnis call the Shiites Dar al-Harb, the house of war, and the Shiites call the Sunnis Dar al-Harb, house of war. And so basically, the bottom line is to convert to Islam or to kill 5/6 of the human race, which is not Muslim, and when they are all gone, 1 billion Muslims will then go ahead and kill each other because the Sunnis hate the Shiites and the Shiites hate the Sunnis.
Wow.
And we saw a little bit of that happening in Afghanistan, didn't we?
Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia. The Shiite Sunni problem is a civil war that has been going on for 1,400 years since the death of Muhammad for the line of succession. And it makes the Catholic-Protestant wars of Reformation look like a Sunday school picnic.
Now, I know the Quran refers back to the Bible, and I know that people will claim that Muslims are serving the same God as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But actually, Allah was the name of a warlike God back when the Arabs were polytheistic, and the Muslims, or Muhammad specifically, kind of picked him out of the hat and made him the one true God. Isn't that so?
Very correct. Firstly, it has to be emphasized that Muhammad was an Arabian. The Arabians had 360 pagan gods, one for every day of the year. The greatest of the three of the 360 gods was the moon. Now, but the moon also, by the way, had a family. The moon was married to the sun, and they had three children who are the three brightest stars in the sky.
What were the children, little asteroids or something?
No.
The three
brightest stars.
Yeah.
If you're a Jewish person, Saturday night, you end the Sabbath when you can see the three brightest stars. These are the daughters of the moon and the sun. And by the way, they are named in the Quran. And Muhammad actually incurred a lot of opposition from the people of Mecca and Medina at first, because they agreed with him. Okay, you want to destroy 357 gods, that's okay, but the three greatest gods, the moon, sun, and stars, that's a family. You can't break up a family. It was like a good luck charm for the people of Mecca and Medina. And it took Muhammad about 12 years until he could destroy the sun, remove the sun and the stars, and say, okay, we are now monotheistic. But what he did was he chose a pagan moon god, war god, and sword god to be their monotheistic god. It's kind of like if you took the Greek mythology, the Greek pantheon, and you abolished all of these gods except for Zeus. Zeus might become a monotheistic god, but it's still not God. It's still not
right.
God of the Jews and the Christians.
And, of course, Zeus wouldn't make much sense out of the context of the other gods. So, in a way, he's mixing apples and oranges here. Victor, was there a time when you felt differently about Islam than you do now? And if so, what were some of the first events that got you to start thinking differently about it?
Yes, well, indeed. I was born in New York, and I was a good Jewish boy, went to Hebrew school. And by age 15, you know, since I was born in 49, I went to Hebrew school. The emphasis in the 50s and 60s was what the Germans did to us in the Holocaust, so I hated the Germans. What the Russians, the Polish, and the Ukrainians did to us, so I hated them. What the Catholics did to us in the Crusades, the Inquisition, the expulsions, so I hated them. And even the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants of America, the WASPs, who never killed one Jew, in American history, I hated them too, because rest assured the day would come, that the time for the Jews would come to be killed in America too. So I moved to Israel at age 19, hating all Christians. And my wife is an Egyptian-born Jewish woman. And when I met her, she said to me, why did you leave America? You must be crazy. You know, America is a rich country. It's a country of peace. And I said to her, because the Goyim hate us. The Christians hate us. And my wife said, are you saying the Goyim, the Gentiles, they're the Christians? And I said, yes. She says, oh, you don't know anything. She said, the Christians are Jews. She said to me, the Jews and the Christians in Arabic are called Ahl el-Kitab. Ahl el-Kitab means the people of the book. The Jews and the Christians are the people, singular, of the book. We have the same God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We have the same Bible. And we all agree that the Messiah is a Jew from Israel who speaks Hebrew.
Yeah, that's right.
Jews don't know who the Messiah is, but Christians do. The Muslims, they are the Goyim. They are the Gentiles. They are the pagans, because they have a pagan God, Allah, who is not the God of the Jews and the Christians. They have a book called the Quran, which destroys the Bible and replaces it. And then for them, Jesus Christ is coming back as a Muslim Arabic speaker who will slit the throats of all the Jews and Christians who do not convert to Islam.
Yeah, and I've read the Quran. That phrase, people, the book, is found throughout. But the Quran also forbids Muslims to befriend Christians and Jews.
Chapter 5, verse 51, correct.
Victor, could you give us, you just mentioned that Jesus of Nazareth is the same as the Muslim Jesus. And you did mention, just in brief, that the plan is for him to come back and slit the throats of all the Jews. Can you go into, the Muslims and the Islamic terrorists have a plan of exactly what Jesus is going to do when the Muslim Jesus is going to do when he returns. Can you lay that out for our audience?
Okay, well, firstly, in order to be accurate, the Muslims have two, I would say, primary teachings in writing. One of them is the Quran, which is, like, of course, like I said, their Bible. And then they have a teaching called the Hadith, H-A-D-I-T-H.
That's like a commentary, isn't it?
It's a commentary, but it's also things that Muhammad said, which were not included in the Quran, but they are considered just as holy, if not more, holier than anything else in the Quran. So in the Hadith, it teaches that Jesus is coming back as a Muslim and an Arabic speaker, that he will kill the Antichrist in battle near the plains of Tel Aviv, where the airport is today. The Antichrist, by the way, is a Jew, according to Islam. Then Jesus, the Muslim, will go up to the Temple Mount, pray with 400,000 Muslim believers on the Temple Mount, and then Jesus will come down, Jesus the Muslim, and he will break the crosses, destroy the churches of the Christians, destroy the synagogues of the Jews, and on that day, Judgment Day, all the Jews and the Christians who have not converted to Islam will have their throats slit personally.
Wow. Well, we'll talk more about Judgment Day according to the Muslims when we return our very special guest today, Victor Mordecai. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed. Or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactiv? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactiv will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution, just call 1-800-420-8744 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8744. 1-800-420-8744. Call now.
This is Bob Siegel. Recently, I was invited to an advanced performance of Broadway Player's current comedy, The Attempted Murder of Peggy Sweetwater. Now, unlike some plays, this one was not a bomb.
She's bloody fainted again.
Dash it all, this is becoming quite tedious.
Gentlemen, this is the best thing that could have happened.
Well, maybe from where you're standing, Saunders, but I don't think Miss Sweetwater would see it that way.
No, I mean the bomb went off when all three of us were in the room. Do you know what that means?
Suicide?
No, it means we're all clear.
Well, that's a relief.
The show runs through the end of August every Saturday at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. I'm telling you folks, this play is hilarious and the acting is first rate. For more information or to purchase advance tickets, go to BroadwayPlayers.com or call 619-448-1107. That's 619-448-1107 or BroadwayPlayers.com.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cushard. Our very special guest today is Victor Mordecai. Victor, you were in the middle of talking about what Muslims believe Jesus is going to do when he returns. Now, do they deny that Jesus was of Jewish ancestry? I know that these days they talk about him being a Palestinian. Has that always been true, or is that a newer belief amongst Muslims?
No, it's correct. Jesus is a Muslim. He's an Arabic speaker. And by the way, one of the great aspects, I have to confess, I've never seen Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion of Christ. I wish I did. I don't have time to go to movies. I preach every night in churches and in synagogues on Shabbat. But anyway, one of the great aspects of this movie, The Passion of Christ, it was shown in the Arab world, in the so-called moderate Arab countries like Kuwait and Bahrain and Dubai and Qatar. And the Muslims flocked to see this movie because they thought they were going to see a movie bashing the Jews. And they saw two things. They saw, firstly, that the Jews just loved Jesus. That's why he was killed. That's why he was crucified. Had the Jews hated Jesus, he would never have been crucified because he would have been irrelevant. So they did not see a movie bashing the Jews. And secondly, they saw Jesus speaking in Aramaic. The whole movie is in Aramaic, which was the lingua franca of the Jews at that time.
So they were incredibly disappointed by this movie.
It was a shock, and it runs contrary to the preachings of the Islamic faith, that Jesus is an Arabic-speaking Muslim. By the way, Adam and Eve are Muslims. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were Muslims.
And they also teach that it was through Ishmael that the promise came rather than through Isaac. And that
yes. and
Abraham
by the way,
sacrificed Ishmael at the altar.
Which altar? You know, what town? In Mecca. In other words, they deny the holiness of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is holy for the Jews and the Christians, not for the Muslims. The Muslims say that Ishmael was supposed to have been sacrificed by Abraham at the Kaaba, at the black stone in Mecca.
And who wrote the Quran? All of this is coming from the Quran, right?
Well, the Quran, again, and the Hadith. All of these teachings make up a composite.
Well, Muhammad recited it orally in his lifetime, but he was not the one that actually wrote it down, correct?
Correct. Muhammad, and by the way, no Muslim will deny this, Muhammad was illiterate. He did not know how to write. And according to the information I have, from Christians and from Jews, in other words, there's a Christian tradition and a Jewish tradition that the Quran was written by a holy man of either faith, or both of them, who were kidnapped. I believe that the Quran was written by a Jewish rabbi and a Christian priest, who were both kidnapped, put in dungeons, and forced to write a holy book. You have to remember, when Muhammad says that he's going to create a religion greater than the Judeo-Christian faith, when he says that they're going to have a God greater than the God of the Jews and the Christians. By the way, for Christian believers, anyone who says he's greater than God is Satan. When the Muslims pray and they say Allahu Akbar, that doesn't mean God is great. Allahu Akbar means Allah is greater than the God of the Jews and the Christians. For me, that's Satan. Anyway, so they have a religion greater than ours. They have a God greater than ours. The only problem was about 80 years after the death of Muhammad, they had already conquered Spain, Portugal, and France, and North Africa, most of the Middle East. But they did not have a book greater than ours. Now, in order for the Muslims to have a book greater than ours, the Bible, they needed a Jew and a Christian who could make a book greater than ours. In other words, to plagiarize and to make a copy of the Bible in their own way. And to do that, they had to add, of course, the Islamic teachings, which was to kill and to destroy the infidel.
One of the common talking points these days, Victor, is that the only reason Muslims are attacking the United States is because of our unfair favoring of Israel over the Palestinians. How would you evaluate a statement like that?
Well, you know what? After 9/11, indeed, apologists for the Muslims were saying, well, America deserved it because America supports Israel. But that's rubbish. The state of Israel has existed 57 years. But the Quran has said for the last 1,300 years that the Jews and the Christians are monkeys and pigs. This is in chapter 5, verse 60 of the Quran.
And isn't that essentially the reason that the Arab world has had a problem with Israel existing, because this was a non-Muslim country and Muslim territory?
Well, this is also true, but don't forget, you have Christians in Lebanon, and they're being decimated. You've got Christians in Egypt, the Coptic Christians, they're being decimated.
Anybody that's non-Muslim gets decimated eventually.
Right. You remember the movie The Blob?
I don't think I saw that one.
That's
I know it's a classic.
This
but
is a generational thing, sir.
Yeah, no.
It's a movie from the 60s,
yes.
And it's about some mysterious meteor that hits the Earth, and a little jelly comes out of it, and it goes around attacking people and devouring them. And each person it devours causes it to grow bigger and bigger. It becomes like a mountain of jello, and it goes around swallowing people up. And that's what Islam is. Islam is a religion that says that we're going to kill the pagans, in other words, the Hindus, the Buddhists, and the blacks. The Jews and the Christians are the people of the book. They respect us because we're not, you know, pagans. We're the people of the book. So they will kill us next.
Because don't we eventually become infidels if we don't convert? And don't they eventually have to kill all infidels?
Exactly. And today, of the 6 billion human beings on the face of the earth, 5-6 are not Muslims. So they have to kill 5-6 of the human race. And when they're finished killing these pagans, you know, and Jews and Christians, then they'll kill each other, which is what we see in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan.
I understand there's even a popular chant in some parts of the world that says, first we will kill the Saturday people and then the Sunday people, Saturday meaning the Jews because of the Sabbath and Sunday meaning the Christians because of their belief in the resurrection.
Very simply, because the Jews keep the Sabbath on Saturday, and the Christians keep the Sabbath on Sunday, so they'll kill one on Saturday, they'll kill the other on Sunday. And by the way, you ask any Arabic-speaking Christian or any Arabic-speaking Jew, and they will say, yes, this is exactly what the Muslims say. And they say it very proudly.
Now, there's been a lot of historical revision about Israel and Palestine. The story that's passed around today, and I'm sorry to say we're even getting it from college professors and encyclopedias are being rewritten. Today's story is that the Palestinians were an indigenous group of people who inhabited the Holy Land for thousands of years before the Jews came shortly before 1948 and kicked them out. It's such nonsense. Would you like to say a few things to set the record straight on the real origin of modern-day Israel?
Okay, well, firstly, I think all your listeners have heard of Mark Twain. Mark Twain visited the Holy Land in 1867.
Yeah, and he didn't care much for it. He found it just desolate.
Absolutely. He wrote a book called Innocents Abroad, and I recommend to all the listeners of your show to get Innocents Abroad. And he describes a very bleak picture of what the Holy Land looks like. You know, it's called the Promised Land, and so Mark Twain says, if this is the Promised Land, I sure don't want it promised to me.
That sounds... Mark that down, Sharon. Mark Twain's going to be our guest next week.
Anyway, so Mark Twain says he would travel for 2 days and not see one human being. The land was empty. The land was desolate. The Turks chopped down the trees. The Turks actually had imposed a tax. Anybody who had trees on his land was taxed per tree. And so people chopped the trees down, except for the fruit trees, of course. There was no tax on that. So the Turks also chopped down the forests in Israel to create their train system and to burn the wood in the locomotives. And so what happened was, when you chop down the trees, whenever you have a rain, you have like, well, you know, you guys are interviewing me from California, so you guys know what landslides are.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Israel suffered from incredible erosion, and all the topsoil swept into the valleys, leaving lunar landscapes on the mountaintops and malarial swamps in the valleys. And so basically Israel, or the land of Israel, or the Palestine Mandate of the British, or before that the Turkish province of southern Syria, was a very inhospitable place. It is true that there were Arab Christians 2,000 years in the Holy Land, since the times of Christ. It is true that from the year 638, with the Arabic invasion, or the Islamic invasion of the Holy Land, that there were Muslims living there. But it was a very, very small group of people.
And there had also been Jews that had lived there, even from
exactly.
The time that Rome scattered them.
The Jews were always in the Holy Land. They never left the Holy Land. And basically what happened was, about 100, 150 years ago, when anti-Semitism was so rife in Europe, the Zionist movement basically was birthed. And you had socialist Zionists, and you had religious Zionists, and you had nationalist Zionists. But the bottom line was, the Jews said, you know what, we need to buy this land legally and go home and develop the land. And so the Arab absentee landlords were glad to take the gold from the European Jews, thinking that these Jews would come, they'd all get malaria and die, and then the land would revert to the FND landlords, the absentee landlords who were living in Beirut or in Damascus. So what happened was, many Jews did die from the malaria, but the fact was that those swamps were drained, the malaria was overcome over the decades, and all of a sudden these absentee landlords came to the realization that the Jews were not going to leave.
Okay, we're going to talk more about what happened when the Jews were invited but then didn't leave, and I do think it's very telling that this land was legally purchased for the most part. We'll be right back, and you are listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
You could be financially independent and never have to worry about money again. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? This is Andy Willoughby speaking for the 3-Step Plan. The 3-Step Plan is a business system designed to help families start their own home-based business. We are looking for a few people in this area who would like to earn between $500 and $5,000 a month working from home. If you like working with people with similar family values, you'll love the 3-Step Plan. For information, call the 3-Step Plan 24-hour info line right now at 800-305-5482. We will teach you everything you need to know to get your business off and running. You will need internet access, a telephone, and good people skills. Families from all over the nation are now using the 3-Step Plan to make extra money, pay off bills, improve their lifestyle, and work from home. Check out the 3-Step Plan. Call toll-free at 800-305-5482. 800-305-5482.
Without regular oil changes, you'll send your car's engine to an early grave. Get to AutoZone today. Change your oil and get more life out of your car. Get in the zone, AutoZone.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Our very special guest today is Victor Mordecai. I had asked him to straighten out some of the historical revision about Israel and Palestine. Victor, you had mentioned that there was a British mandate inviting Jews to come, and a lot of the land was legally purchased from the Arabs. I think this is a fact that people are simply not hearing today.
Very correct. And like I said, firstly, I want to say something from a legalistic point of view. And that is, in 1917, the British government, under Lord Balfour, passed what is known as the Balfour Declaration, promising the Jews a homeland in what was then the Palestine Mandate. The Palestine Mandate at that time included what is today the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. In other words, Israel to the east of the Jordan, Israel to the west of the Jordan. And in 1922, the Kingdom of England decided to cut off everything to the east of the Jordan River, which is today the Hashemite Kingdom, and to give that to Abdullah, who was a Hashemite. And you have to remember, the House of Saud was fighting with the Hashemites. This was a feud between Saudi tribes. And in order to make peace in Saudi Arabia, the British decided to take away two-thirds of the Jewish mandate and give it to the House of the Hashemites.
So we've actually, you know, we keep hearing if only there was a separate Palestinian state, but by this large majority of what had been promised to Israel being carved off and becoming the country of Transjordan, we've really had a Palestinian state for over 50 years.
And indeed,
it's called Jordan.
And indeed, 70% of the population of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan is not Hashemite. 70% of the population is Palestinian. So, in fact, today, there is a Palestinian country known as Jordan.
And isn't it also true that in those days, the Arabs pretty much thought of themselves as Arabs, and the term Palestinian was actually being used of Jews that were coming into the land?
Exactly. In the 1940s, during the war with the Nazis, if you were in the Palestinian Brigade, you were a Jew. If you were a Palestinian Muslim or an Arab Muslim, you'd be in the SS. Joining Hitler. And it's a very little-known fact that in the coalition of forces that Hitler was using in the war against the Russians in the Battle of Stalingrad, there was a very hardcore SS unit made up of Muslims from Chechnya, Bosnia, Kosovo, Albania, and the Palestinian Muslims.
Amazing. So let's make sure our audience gets this a step at a time. There was a British mandate inviting the Jews to return to their Holy Land. They purchased a lot of it. Behind their back, some 70% or so of it was given to the Arabs. It became the country of Jordan. And then isn't it true, Victor, that after that, the United Nations went and partitioned it again, so the little sliver, the little 25% or so that was left to go to Israel, was then partitioned again. The Palestinian Arabs were offered a separate state again, and then they rejected that state when it was offered to them, didn't they?
Yes, and by the way, a little footnote in history. In 1936, the British government established the Peel Commission, and the Peel Commission came to the Holy Land and offered the Jews and the Arabs a two-state solution, in which the Jews basically would get only from the area of what is today Tel Aviv to Haifa. In other words, just a little narrow coastal strip along the coast. That would be the Jewish state, and the Jews agreed, the Arabs didn't. And that led us to the next UN resolution in 1947, calling for the partition, which, again, the Palestinians said no, the Jews said yes, and as a result, all this fighting broke out. So a Jewish state was formed, but the Palestinian state never came to be. And by the way, another very important point, I don't know if you're going to get to it in your questions, but, you know, that Gaza, you know, people say Egyptian Gaza. Well, Gaza was never Egyptian. Gaza was supposed to be a part of a Palestinian state, and the Egyptians annexed it. And the West Bank was conquered by the Jordanian Legion under King Abdullah. Abdullah did not create a Palestinian state. Instead, he said, well, we're going to annex this to Jordan. And this was only recognized by Pakistan and England.
Well, and then in 1948, after the Jews agreed to have this separate state, the Arabs were going to annihilate Israel. And it was only for the sake of their own survival that after they survived this war, their territory got expanded a little bit.
Exactly. I think... forgive the expression, manifest destiny. Just as the United States experienced stages of manifest destiny, Israel was attacked and Israel to defend itself expanded, and each time Israel gets attacked, it has to defend itself. And to defend itself, when you're talking about a little country that, you know, you go from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea driving in 1 hour, that's how small the country is.
Yeah, and what's also interesting is that the Palestinians then lived under the care of Jordan from 1948 to 1967, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember ever hearing anything during that time about a separate Palestinian state when they were living under Jordan. It's just when Israel got attacked again and expanded its territory again that we heard about the terrible Israelis keeping the Palestinians under wraps.
Right. By the way, in favor of King Hussein and King Abdullah, his father, and of course the son now, King Abdullah II, it has to be emphasized that whereas all the other Islamic countries hold up their Palestinians in refugee camps and would not let them become citizens, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan was very fair to the Palestinians, gave them Jordanian citizenship. But you are right, the Hashemites would never have countenanced the creation of a Palestinian state in the West Bank.
That was an idea that was made popular by Arafat, isn't that true? And he wasn't even a Palestinian, wasn't he Egyptian-born himself?
He was Egyptian-born, and again, you have to remember that a lot of these people, you know, Palestinians are kind of like Jews, you know, they come in and they go out, and they live in other countries, and the Palestinians, like the Jews, have a diaspora. And so, you know, by the way, one of the problems today in the negotiations with the Palestinians is that the Palestinians want 4 million Palestinian Muslims from all over the world to be reintegrated into the state of Israel, which would basically give the Muslims the majority, meaning it would be the end of the Jewish state, the one and only Jewish state on the face of the
earth. Right, what they call the right of return. Basically, no matter what Israel agrees to, it's not going to be enough. Correct?
Yeah, and by the way, Mahmoud Abbas has said that without, forget about Gaza, what we see happening now, forget about Gaza. Unless they get Jerusalem, unless Israel is forced back to the borders of 49, and unless they have the right to bring in 4 million Muslims into what remains of Israel, back to Jaffa, back to Acre, back to Haifa, back to Ramleh, to all these areas, there will be no peace. So there is. So, you know, it's a non-starter.
Victor, I was listening to your first and second tapes, or lectures, rather, that you have on your website at www.vicmord.com, V-I-C-M-O-R-D, for
right.
Anybody else that would like to listen to it. And you mention in your second one, your second tape series, that George W. Bush made an agreement with Saudi Arabia that Israel will have to return to borders before the 67 war, and that Israel will have to give over East Jerusalem to the Palestinians. To the Palestinians, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you believe that what's happening right now is Bush's mandate coming to be?
Yes, absolutely. The roadmap to peace, as it is euphemistically called, is basically just the 1990 Saudi peace plan, which is forcing Israel back to the borders of 1949, which, by the way, has always been the policy of the U.S. State Department. Now, something that has to be said very clearly, United Nations resolutions 242 and 338, which were not favorable to Israel, said that Israel had to give land for peace, but Israel needed new borders which were secure, recognized, and defensible. And I emphasize the word defensible. Now, if the UN itself says that Israel needs new borders which are secure, recognized, and defensible, that means the Jordan River must be Israel's eastern frontier. The half the Golan Heights that we still have, we gave over half the Golan in 74, but the half the Golan that we still have is essential, vital to Israel's defense, and Gaza Strip border with Egypt on the Philadelphia Road. Now, what has happened, basically, is that the United States government under George W. Bush, State Department, Condoleezza Rice, these people who are all in bed with the oil companies, the oil corporations, the Saudis, the Islamic world, these people are in agreement with the Arabs that they disagree with UN resolutions 242 and 338. Israel, by the way, handed over Sinai and half the Golan on the basis of UN resolutions 242 and 338. So basically what the people today are saying in the State Department is they don't care about UN resolutions 242 and 338. They don't care about Israel needing borders for its security and defense. And basically Israel will be sacrificed for a barrel of oil. Israel will be destroyed.
Well, you know, it seems that when there's a peace treaty made, both sides are supposed to get something out of it. It always seems that the offer given to Israel is, you give us land, we'll promise not to kill you. Sound fair? Well, it'll be fair to return to our program when we get back with our fascinating guest, Victor Mordecai. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Without regular oil changes, you'll send your car's engine to an early grave. Get to AutoZone today. Change your oil and get more life out of your car. Get in the zone, AutoZone.
When I listen to Viewpoint San Diego, I often ask myself, what is Viewpoint San Diego? Is it interesting? Is it local? Is it funny? Is it important? Does it have a beat? The answer is yes. Viewpoint San Diego, Sundays, 1 to 2 p.m. on News Talk 1170 KCBQ, where your opinion counts. News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Kashard. Our very special guest today, and we're so honored to have him, is Victor Mordecai. Victor, we were talking about what's going on with the Gaza Strip, and I should tell our listening audience this is a pre-recorded interview. So on Sunday, while you're hearing us, who knows what might have happened in the news by then. But at the time of this recording, the Israeli soldiers are forcefully removing their own people from the Gaza Strip. Now, I can't help but notice, Victor, that the Gaza Strip is separate from the West Bank, and so isn't it going to occur to somebody down the road that the Palestinians want a country that's connected in the middle, and won't that just mean that they're going to ask Israel later on to give up even more land?
Well, that's indeed what Condi Rice and George W. have been saying. What we have been saying for the last 20, 30 years, you know, as when the peace process started with Egypt in 79, was that, you know, we might, as Israelis, we might be amenable to an extraterritorial highway that would link Gaza and the West Bank. In other words, you could theoretically leave Gaza, get on this highway, and drive nonstop without stopping to the West Bank. In other words, obviously Israel would have, tunnels underneath that highway or bridges over the highway to keep Israel connected. In other words, we are amenable to an idea of if the Palestinians behave themselves, for heaven's sakes, that we would give them a highway connecting. I don't think that for any moment anyone would ever imagine in his wildest nightmares that Israel would give more land connecting Gaza and West Bank, which basically would mean that Israel itself would be disconnected.
Well, isn't it true that in Palestine, Israel is not even on their maps, that little kindergarten-age kids are taught that the Jews are devils, and that really the Palestinians aren't going to be satisfied with anything but the final annihilation of Israel?
Very correct. And this is something that the American media, in most part, is not telling the American public. And there are a few radio and TV programs that I'm invited to that, tell the truth. And that is that there cannot be peace between Israel and the Muslims at all. And the reason that Yasser Arafat walked away from Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak in June of 2000, they offered him half of Jerusalem.
They offered him over 90% of what he wanted,
didn't
they?
And he walked away from it.
Yeah.
He started Intifada number 2 in September of 2000.
Because his identity is fed by not having peace.
Okay, so the point is, why did Arafat walk away from it? Because had he signed a peace agreement with the Jews, he would have been killed the next day by the Islamic fanatics, because you cannot make peace with the Jews. You cannot make peace with the Christians, except for a very temporary peace. But the war has to continue until the Jews and Christians are all annihilated.
And isn't it true that every time Israel makes a peace treaty, there's an attack against Israel, if not the same day, the day after? Maybe you have a couple of examples you could share.
No, absolutely. And indeed, you have good cop, bad cop. The good cops are the ones that appear on CNN, and the bad cops are the ones that set off the bombs. So it's like, you know, you remember Schultz in Hogan's Heroes?
Yes.
You know, I know nothing, I saw nothing.
Yeah.
That's the good guy cops of the Palestinians. And they will not raise their hand up against their fellow fanatic Muslims because they are like the Jews. They're split very much down the middle. I would say in Gaza, for example, even 60% of the population in Gaza is Hamas and Islamic Jihad, and only 40% are PLO. Palestinian Liberation Organization, which are the Arafat terrorists.
And their new moderate leader, Abbas, I've heard him described as just Arafat in a suit. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And like I said earlier in this interview, he says, like Arafat and like the most fanatic Muslims, there will be no peace until they bring back 4 million Palestinian refugees from all over the world to outnumber the Jews and destroy the Jewish state, and until they get Jerusalem, and until they get Israel back to the borders of 49, and then they'll destroy Israel after they get whatever they can get in peace, then the rest will destroy them.
It's a religion of peace, all right. A peace here, a peace there, a peace blown up everywhere.
Absolutely correct.
Well, isn't it true, too, Victor, that Muslims spend billions of dollars making the world believe that Islam is a religion of peace?
By the way, the brother of President George W. Bush, I think his name is Neil, and he was also involved in the S&M bank collapse. And after the bank collapse, he moved to Saudi Arabia, which I suppose is a nice asylum for him. And he's doing the PR for the King of Saudi Arabia. So, you know, and Barbara Bush just created the a PR company. And you know, the amount of money that the Bush family has received between the father, the mother, and the sons, totals in the billions.
What do you think's going through Bush's mind these days? Do you ever get the feeling that he wouldn't want to be even making these deals with terrorists if not for the people around him that are always advising him and telling him what he must do and what he must not do?
Well, listen, I was on Sean Hannity's radio show 3 years ago. He hasn't had me back since then because I said that there are people in Washington, Democratic or Republican, who believe that the key to the world today is economics. So if the Muslims have the oil and they have the petrodollars and they have the numbers, the people, and the Jews do not have the oil and the Jews do not have the money and the Jews do not have the people that the Muslims do, you do business with those who you need to get the American economy going and to survive. And the Jews basically are dispensable.
You know, Victor, Americans do need to have a better education, I think. And we do get all this news from our own media. Where can people go? Where can Americans go? Maybe some good websites that you know of where they can be plugged into what's going on in Israel.
Well, firstly, if people go to my website, I link up with Jewish and Christian websites. By the way, I link up with the Jerusalem Post, which is Israel's daily newspaper. It's not a right-wing paper, but it's a good newspaper. I link up with International Herald Tribune. I mean, you cannot say that I'm tendentious. But the international newspapers usually are much better than the American newspapers. They're much more cosmopolitan, and they show articles about things that are going on throughout the world. So if people go to my website, which is vicmord.com, V-I-C-M-O-R-D.com, they can go to the links and then link up with other sources as well. By the way, I'm also a journalist, and I helped to create a, actually it's a Christian magazine. It's aimed at the Christian public, even though I myself am a Jewish person. The magazine is called Israel Today. It is a monthly magazine. You can link to it from my website, or you can go directly to Israel Today. I think it's .co.il. They have a daily newsletter. Very important. And all of this is free, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You have, for example, ICEJ. I think it's .org. Is the International Christian Embassy of Jerusalem. These are Christians who stand with Israel, Bible-believing Christians. And it's very interesting today that we see that the Jews and the Christians are coming together over the need to preserve the land of Israel and not hand it over to the Muslims, because, you know, the bottom line of Islam is that if the Jews and the Christians believe that the Messiah is coming to Jerusalem, then you need to nuke Jerusalem to prevent that from happening and to show that the Quran is greater than the Bible, Allah is greater than the God of the Jews and the Christians. And that's one of the reasons why I predict we will be seeing a military confrontation sooner than later with Iran.
Yeah, in fact, the Israeli intelligence chief predicted Iran would have a nuclear weapon in 3 years, not the 10 years that the CIA of the United States is predicting.
You know what? Let me tell you something, darling. November, forgive me for saying darling.
That's okay.
It's natural for me.
She is kind of darling.
November 2003, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post. I have it in hard copy, and anyone who wants it, send me an email. You'll have to wait about 2 months till I get back to Israel. I'll mail it to you. But there's an article in November of 2003 which said that by November of 2004, Iran would be online with nuclear missile capabilities. So I don't say 10 years and I don't say 3 years. I say they have it now. And there's also a gentleman who you might have heard of, and if you haven't, you need to have him on your show. His name is Paul Williams, and he was an FBI consultant. And he wrote a book that just came out now that the Iranians have already exported free of charge 15 to 20 nuclear devices to the United States, and they are already deployed in American cities ready to be detonated.
Wow. Now, speaking of weapons, this whole business of the weapons of mass destruction with Saddam Hussein, do you believe that he did? Everyone's saying now that he didn't have them after all. I'm not sure that I'm convinced, but I don't know. Do you think that he did have them and that they found their way into Syria or perhaps Iran?
The answer is definitely yes. And by the way, my wife, who is Egyptian-born and Arabic-speaking, works in intelligence gathering, and they were watching the satellite monitors of these tremendous 18-wheelers crossing over from Iraq into Syria prior to the most recent war in Iraq, known as the American invasion of Iraq. And the weapons were sent to Syria, the weapons were sent to Libya, the weapons were sent to Sudan. In my first book, Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat?, I talk about the gassing of the blacks in the south of Sudan with weapons they received from Iran and Iraq.
Now, I'm figuring our administration must know this. I heard a long time ago that Israeli intelligence gave such reports. I'm thinking they know this. What would you agree with that? And what would be the reason for acting like they don't know anything?
Three-letter word, O-I-L.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the way, I want to tell you something, and I don't know how much time we have left. I know the interview is wrapping up pretty soon. But I will say that, you know, there was a video that I did not make. There was a video made by PBS, Public Broadcasting. You cannot say that they're Zionist or they're Christian. The PBS was made in 1994 by Stephen Emerson. And the video spoke about plans of the Muslims to destroy America's planes, to destroy the World Trade Center. And it came out in 1994, Stephen Emerson's Jihad in America. By the way, I offer it on my website, victmore.com, in the bookstore. I've sold thousands of these videos. PBS took it off its shelves from their 800 number. And Christian said to me, we called PBS, as you told us. We can't. They took it off their shelves. They're not selling it anymore under pressure from Clinton and the Muslims. But the FBI even knew what was going to happen in 1994 in the United States. But for reasons of political correctness, they couldn't act. So, you know, why should we be surprised? If your own law enforcement, if your own intelligence people in America will not reveal to the American people the truth for political reasons, why should we be surprised about nuclear weapons and other things happening in the Middle East that the people who are in control are too busy doing business with the Saudis?
Well, now, it seems that it would be politically advantageous to Bush to prove to people that the WMDs were there, but you're saying that because of oil, even he is motivated to not let that leak out?
That's the reason that they won't have me on Sean Hannity anymore. I'm telling you, you know, I don't blame the Republicans only. The Democrats, Bill Clinton left the White House with $1 million in his pocket only. I have in my third book, Islamic Threat Updates Almanac, an article that I received from different sources that Bill Clinton got $20 million from the Saudis for his library in Harlem, New York, that the University of Arkansas just received $26 million. University of Arkansas is Bill Clinton's, you know, pet project. You know, people like Bush and Clinton, again, Republicans and Democrats, they serve the Saudis faithfully, knowing that once they leave the White House, that's when they're going to get $500,000 per lecture.
Wow, this is harrowing stuff. Well, we'll be back for our last segment. Our very special guest today, Victor Mordecai. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Hi, this is Dick Drury with Kitchen and Bath Experts, your experts at designing and building your dream kitchen. Kitchen and Bath Experts is a full-service general contractor. We build your dream kitchen from design through all aspects of construction with quality you and your family will love.
You've heard Dick Drury's Kitchen and Bath Expert show Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. on KCBQ and KPRZ. Now attend his free kitchen design seminar on Saturday morning, September 17th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Check out their beautiful new 4,000-square-foot showroom at 7475 Claremont South Mesa Boulevard. Attend the Saturday Morning Kitchen Design Seminar and receive $500 off the design fee for your new kitchen. Learn about the important details of kitchen design, cabinet construction, plumbing, flooring, and more. Seating is limited for this free kitchen design seminar Saturday, September 17th. Call 858-874-5800 now to reserve your space and receive your $500 discount. That's 858-874-5800.
California Contractors License Number 350907.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Tired of that old car? Donate it and get a receipt for your tax donation. Car won't pass smog? Donate it and get a receipt for your tax donation. Want to help families, seniors, and kids in your community? Donate your vehicle and get a receipt for your tax donation. It's easy. Call Jewish Family Service. They do all the work and you get a receipt for your tax donation. They pick up anywhere, including your repair shop. Same day pickups are available. Jewish Family Service will provide you with all the necessary DMV forms and you don't have to worry about figuring out the value of your car. Your tax receipt will be automatically sent to you when the car sells. JFS has been providing social services to people of all ages, ethnicities, and religions since 1918. Furniture and household items accepted. Volunteers are always welcome. Call 877-JFS-4CAR. That's 877-JFS, the number 4-CAR.
Jewish Family Service, family is our middle name.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Victor, the time goes by quickly on our last segment. And for that reason, before we continue talking, I want to take this time to thank you so much for coming on our program. I hope you'll do it again. I think everybody needs to hear what it is that you have to say, but we're very honored to have you today.
Well, I've been doing this work for 16 years, and I've been on hundreds of different radio programs and TV programs. Eventually the truth is going to get out, even though I am kind of on a lot of blacklists. I know from personal sources inside of CNN that I am on a blacklist. They'll never have me on CNN. Fox, it doesn't say I'm on a blacklist, but Fox says I'm too radical. But you know what? When they start setting off nuclear weapons in American cities, killing millions of Americans, then maybe people might not think I'm so radical.
Well, and that's disappointing that Fox, with their view of being fair and balanced, would be that way. I'll bet being blacklisted is the least of your problems, though. Are there threats against your life from Muslim fanatics?
Something? I cannot say that there have been threats. I will say that, remember Rodney Dangerfield? I don't get no respect.
Yeah.
I don't get no respect in America or Israel, but I made first page of Saudi Arabia's biggest newspaper, El Watan. And if anybody writes to me at my email, I'll send you the article in Arabic and in English. I made first page of Saudi Arabia's biggest newspaper because I was quoting the Quran, chapter 5, verse 60, that the Jews and the Christians are monkeys and pigs. And Sheikh Ikram al-Sabri was saying in Jerusalem, kill the Jews, kill the Christians, kill the Israelis, kill the Americans, kill the monkeys, and kill the pigs. And so I was quoting that. I made first page of Saudi Arabia's biggest newspaper. So as I say in the churches, I do get respect in Saudi Arabia, but you might want to pray for me.
Yeah, you really got to see the irony, because the Jews and the Christians aren't paying attention to you, and the Muslims are. They know that what you're saying is true. They know more than anybody.
And by the way, they're very triumphalistic and very proud of everything that I say about that. They say that they're saying they don't deny it.
Absolutely harrowing. But Victor, do you know of one country where Muslims are in control and those living under the Muslims obtain full rights? I mean, not just the Arab countries. There's Muslim countries all over the world, and I'm familiar with a good deal of them. I don't know that much about every single Muslim country, but do you know of one where the Muslims are in control and those that live under them are not second-class citizens?
Well, firstly, you said two things. You just said the second-class citizen part. If you are not a Muslim, you are a dhimmi. Dhimmi, D-H-I-M-M-I. Dhimmi means second-class subservient slave to an Islamic leadership.
And this would be true in any country where the government and the religion Islam is one and the same thing?
Exactly. Now, I will say, for example, in defense of the Moroccan king, that the Jews have a place of respect in Morocco. The same can be said in Turkey. The only problem is the moment you have an Islamic overthrow of the existing regime, then the Jews are the first to be targeted.
Oh, so the the reason that they're being respected then is that they are not technically Muslim regimes in those countries at the moment.
Yes. Or shall I say it's because of the favor that the king would give to the Jews in that country.
Well, in our last few minutes, Victor, are there a few things you'd like to leave with our listening audience? I'm sure everybody found this fascinating. And if any of you out there want a copy of this program, write us and we will get you one, because I think you need to play this again and again and learn this stuff. You're hearing things here that you're not hearing on a lot of radio or TV programs.
Okay, well, firstly, what I'm saying is that what Israel is facing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a very, very small, as much of a tragedy as it is for me as an Israeli and a Jew. It is very small compared to the terror and the death and destruction that Islam is preparing for the United States and England and the European countries and other countries of the world. And I believe, unfortunately, that we are on the verge of a major terror attack offensive on the United States, on Canada, on Europe. And at the same time, I believe we are on the verge of a very major counteroffensive against countries like Iran and Syria. So things are going to be very interesting. You know, the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. And those are the times that we are living in now.
When this next attack comes, will America wake up, or will they find a way to blame it on Israel even again?
Well, indeed, there will be those people who will try to blame it on Israel again. But you see, Israel, and maybe this is the irony here, Israel has said, you know what, you're squeezing us. You know what, we'll hand over Gaza, and then let's see what happens. And then after Israel hands over Gaza, the terrorist attack comes anyway. So I think a lot of Americans are not stupid people. There are people in the government and in the media who have an agenda paid for by Saudi petrodollars. And so it's not that they are necessarily evil people, but they are greedy people. But I think the American people are not greedy and they're not stupid, and they may not know all the facts. But the next attack, God forbid, is going to awaken the American people.
But in the long term, then, you're optimistic that we're going to finally wake up and do what we need to do?
I am very optimistic. I believe in God. I believe in Israel. I believe in the United States. The United States saved the world in World War I. It was not an American war. It got sucked into World War I. America has tried to stay out of World War II. It got sucked in by the Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor. The United States went in and had to pick up the pieces from all these crazy Europeans and fascists all over the world. Then America had to save the world from the communist Russia. And instead of showing appreciation to the United States, everybody hates the United States throughout the world. The hatred that people have for the United States is kind of like anti-Semitism. The hatred of the Jews is the same hatred of the Christians and those who believe in God.
Yeah, completely irrational in their hatred of America and Israel. Victor, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope we can have you on again.
God bless you. God bless America and Israel, and God save the world from this crazy system of Islam.
We'll be back next week for our radio program. You are always welcome, everybody. Your questions are welcome, too.